Welcome to the Canon Cantina Season 2. My name is Jesse, and I am joined, as always, by my Star Wars best friend, Mike. We're fully in Season 2, Mike. How are you doing?
It's Season 2. It's the second one. And I am buried, on the ice planet Hoth right now. Got about 16 inches of snow at my house today. Work at the university. Work got shut down, so spent the whole day just dealing with the snow, the youngling, and a dog who is we got more snow than my dog is tall. So it was super fun watching him like tunnel around in the backyard.
It's one of my favorite things is seeing corgis or corgi type breeds going through high snow. Of course, I'm on planet Oklahoma, Space Station Tulsa, like normal. And like normal, I live in Oklahoma, so the weather is different every day. And right now we're in the throes of February, and we have weather like Dantooine. We're like in the 70s. Okay, hey, it's really strange.
I'll say that Salt Lake did its best Oklahoma impression because yesterday when I went to bed, there was no snow on the ground, and it had gotten up to 57 during the day.
So you're about 60 degrees, and then you got feet of snow.
Yeah. Okay.
That's pretty close. You're coming close to the Oklahoma. Yeah, we kind of got some Alderaan weather going on here today. It's
where it's 10,000 degrees and earthquakes everywhere as the planet breaks apart.
No.
It's the oceans boil.
Except my friend Kyle does have that shirt, and it's phenomenal. The Alderaan forecast. Yeah, we're back in the Canon Cantina. If you guys listened to our last episode, we talked about the changes with this year, the positive changes for the show. We also talked about, you know, a retrospective of the last almost, you know, 2 years, year and a half-ish of the show, 70 episodes of the show, Mike. We went through a retrospective of
but
that.
Who's counting?
So today marks the beginning of the new, even though we're not getting too heavy right off the bat. We have to finish some things that happened at the end of the year before everybody took their holiday break. We've got to finish talking about The Mandalorian. And, you know, of course, some of this Rise of Skywalker stuff, which we'll get into next time. But The Mandalorian and Rise of Skywalker are big things that happened during this holiday season. And Mike and I haven't finished all of our thoughts on those things, and we don't want to leave you hanging.
That's right. So today we are going to finish up our season one cliffhanger, if you will, of The Mandalorian. I think we did individual episodes covering like the first six. I think so. We just had 7 and 8 to talk about together here. It's been what, like 6 weeks or so, 6 or 7 weeks since The Mandalorian finished. I've gone back and rewatched episodes a few times. Still have my Disney Plus subscription. I'm not one of the people that finished The Mandalorian and canceled it.
Right. Well, there you go. Well, in Clone Wars too now. Right?
Yes, in Clone Wars coming out here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So. Today, we're basically going to go through episodes 7 and 8 of The Mandalorian and kind of recap our final thoughts about season one. We've done that every episode, but truly do it now because the season is over.
Yeah, I think we also just kind of need to review the show in general because it's been long enough. I rewatched the beginning.
Good.
It's been since they aired in quotes, since I've watched episode 8, and I watched it twice. I don't remember a whole lot of the specifics. So if you want to drive that conversation, go for it.
Episode 8 specifics, because where we left off was Mandalorian chapter 6 and 7.
We did 6 and 7. Okay, so we just have to do 8 today.
So 8 in retrospective of the entire series, yeah. Mike, basically.
Jason Sudeikis, Adam Pally, public enemies number one for how they treated the $5 million puppet. Jon Favreau had to come down and threaten to break their
you
knees.
Know it. Yeah, we were watching this with our friends. We had our Mandalorian watch nights, which were such a blast. It was an extension of Thrones nights, but even more fun because it's Star Wars. And
never mind, go on.
Yeah, never mind. And man, like that was going on, and just seeing people's reactions at my party. And on top of that, I was like, don't worry, everyone. Everyone's like, what do you mean, don't worry? I'm like, IG-11 is coming to save the day. I know it's going to happen. He's a nurse droid, but he still means business. And that's what we get next. We get this comedic scene, which is very Taika. And then we get IG-11 show up, who is Taika, and murder these scout troopers.
One of them might have survived and just been like extremely unconscious after that.
Like severe concussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then he takes the speeder bike, and then we have, you know, where the episode kind of ramps up. We have Gideon continuing on his tirade and his monologues about the Empire. And then he calls everybody out by name. He says, "I know Cara Dune of Alderaan and Din Djarin cool. of Mandalore cool. and Greef Karga of the Smuggler's Guild." He kind of like, he's like, "I've done the research because I'm an ISB officer.
And here, you Star Wars nerds, let me drop. This is an E-Web 2.0, blah, 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 blah. Those of you that yep. read the Weapons of and Visual Dictionaries and blah, blah, blah. Right.
For all the Star Wars Legion players out there, my troopers are bringing out an E-Web emplacement blaster." Yeah, that happened.
He is so over the top, Giancarlo Esposito as Moff Gideon, like so over the top in moments like that, but that's also perfect. Very Star Wars. So it was great.
Yeah, it's very Imperial Remnant too. Like I'm excited to see this new canon version of the Imperial Remnant, and you know, there's not a lot of them left, Mike. So the guys that are in charge that are left, this is what we're being told about them through the canon, and I like it. It makes sense with the Empire. We got so many stormtroopers. Of course, this is where we have the 501st members that showed up, which was so cool. You mentioned that in our last Mandalorian episode, and we'll mention it again because it's such a cool thing. And then, of course, we have like the E-Web blaster and Moff Gideon's TIE fighter, which for some reason has amazingly folding wings that lands conveniently for him to get out in an easier place. I don't know what's going on with that, but it's cool.
The planetary model.
Yeah, absolutely. TIE fighters have always struggled in atmosphere, so maybe this is the planetary atmosphere model of the TIE fighter. And then, of course, we have the Death Trooper contingent with him, his entourage of Death Troopers, just like we saw with Krennic. Thank goodness they sounded like the Death Troopers in Rogue One, not like the Death Troopers in Star Wars Rebels, which sounded like some Cockney North England confused men. So, but basically, it's looking pretty dire. The most interesting part about this is the exposition about the Empire stuff. That's fine. But that he basically knows everyone. He's done his research, and he even brings up Din Djarin and the Siege of Mandalore, right? And
the Night of a Thousand Tears.
The Night of a Thousand Tears. And he kind of strikes a nerve with the Mandalorian. And this is more backstory in the Mandalorian, which is the most important part of this episode in some ways, because, you know, it's our character, our lead character. So also I loved the Cara Dune of Alderaan.
Mm-hmm.
How great was that?
That was super cool.
That shows why she maybe signed up for the rebellion. Maybe. You never know.
They get out through the sewers, but not after. They go out and they kick a wholesale ass until the Mandalorian gets owned by the explosion of the E-Web power generator.
That's right. And Baby Yoda actually reflects the shock trooper's flamethrower.
John Favreau would yell at you. It's the child.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm using the moniker everybody else has been using. I've been saying Yoda baby because it's not Baby Yoda, clearly. But yeah, the child is the correct word.
Yeah, we missed our chance to make Yaddle Spawn catch on, didn't we?
We really did. That should have been us.
But yeah, there's that great fight scene where IG-11 rolls into town on the swoop bike, and he like, you know, rotates his torso to the back to protect the baby, and he throws the speeder bike at people.
It all coalesced to this, Mike.
First episode wholesale now. Ass. Like IG-11 is obviously doing the heavy lifting, but even, you know, Greef Karga's getting in there, taking out some stormtroopers.
Great Star Wars humor here. We have a stormtrooper interrogating a Jawa, and then IG-11 shooting the stormtrooper, and then the Jawa like, "I'm free."
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Yeah.
But the Mandalorian gets hurt in that explosion from the E-Web power generator.
Yeah, it takes a blow to the head.
So that's when they get inside, and that's when the flamethrooper like goes in to burn them out, and the child's like, "Oh, I don't think so." And
magic, you know, hand.
Do the magic hand thing, baby. But then that's right. So Greef and Cara take off down the sewers first. And then we get confirmation that there was at least one day where Pedro Pascal was on set.
That's right.
Absolutely. It might have been the only day. but we got confirmation he was there.
Yeah, really cool scene. We knew it was going to go down that way. He's like, I'm not a living thing. Yeah, as Yelena says, you can take your helmet off of me. Yeah. And, you know, even more poetically, of course, IG-11 is gone later in the episode. So the only thing that's even ever seen his face is now gone by the end. But yeah, he saves the Mandalorian's life with Bacta spray. And now we know that IG models have Bacta spray, which is amazing.
Well, maybe IG models don't, but nurse droids do. Maybe that was a Queel modification.
Man, Queel. I miss him. Yeah, we do confirm in this episode that Queel is 100% dead. Any suspicions we had, if any at all, are definitely confirmed in this episode. And, you know, but let's move on. We have, of course, now that Din Djarin, we know his actual name. Now that Din is healed, sort of.
Yeah, he's like healing for the next like few scenes when they get through the sewers.
They encounter the armorer.
They talk to the armor and they find out that everybody else is dead.
Yeah.
Good job, Mando. You got all your friends killed. Of course, I did rewatch episode 3 fairly recently, and he's like, you need to move the covert, and they clearly didn't. So that's kind of on them for staying there.
They're like, we're going to hold out. He's like, no, leave. The Empire will come.
Yeah, and there was like 7 Mandalorians or whatever in the 3rd episode in that shootout in town. They can handle all the bounty hunter scum you want to throw out there. But even, you know, Imperial Remnant stormtroopers, enough of them. It's clearly enough to wipe out, and Death Troopers is enough to wipe out the Mandalorians that are hiding there in the sewers.
Man, that's a battle I would pay to see. That'd be really enjoyable. It would be Mandalorians versus like elite Imperial Remnant stuff. But we get more of this character, Mike, and we get more of the Mandalorian's history. We finally see his full flashback, finally, with the Separatist forces when the B2 battle droids are about to kill him, and we see the Mandalorians come and save him, and we see the Mandalorian pick him up and take off with the jetpack and take him to safety and adopt them as a foundling. And then, of course, we see that shot later in the show with the Mandalorian and the child. But cool, we finally got his final story with his parents and his adoption, and then how he got brought in.
It's nothing we didn't know already, though. The cool stuff is the armorer being like, nope, I'm not mad that you got everybody else killed. Clearly this child is special. We get a little bit of, the Jedi were enemies or whatever.
Sorcerers. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorcerers that were enemies, but he gets his Mudhorn signet and they become a clan of 2, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's super cool that she decides he still gets the Mudhorn too. When he said I wasn't worthy and all this stuff, and she says, no, you guys were together. This is important. You are now this child's father until it reunites with his people. She's and like, I'm going to give you the signet of the Mudhorn.
I don't have time to figure anything else out. We're just going to go with the Mudhorn and be fine with it.
Yeah. Well, it was a uniting factor for them, right? They beat the Mudhorn together in a weird way, and it bonded them for life. So I love it. I love that he has a signet now. It's great. And she's an awesome character. I want more of the armor character.
Well, and we know she survived because like 6 or 8 stormtroopers came to her and more whipping wholesale ass. Like she threw a guy in the smelter and everything. Yep. She was cracking helmets.
Shattered a guy's face. Yeah.
Chirrut style from Rogue One.
So good.
So she's fine. So hopefully she... maybe she expands her shop there on Navarro or whatever. But
let's move on to the next part.
IG carries out the jetpack that is definitely not foreshadowing at all. And they get to the river of lava.
Yeah, River Styx with the creepy / amazing astromech with the I don't even know what happened there. I have night sweats about this guy. I love him. I'm terrified of him. He's an astromech that was modified just for the river, and he has arms and legs, more like an IG droid in some ways. But the astromech ferries them down this river Styx, right? And this is where we get towards the end of the episode where we realize that they are actually trapped. The Empire has set up an ambush at the end, right, Mike?
And here we get IG-11's kind of like T-800 moment.
Yep.
Where he...
His like, actual death moment.
Yeah. He steps out into the lava and his legs, you know, start melting. But,
he's done the math. He's done the calculations.
Done the math. He's got his manufacturer mandated self-destruct thermal detonator. it's all great. Because even the Mandalorian who hates droids and hated this one in particular is like, wait, no. Okay. Bye. But like obviously he's like,
don't you have to protect the child? And he's like, my manufacturer mandate overrides that, and I know you'll protect the child if I do this. So it's cool. You're breaking through the exterior of the Mandalorian with his hatred of the droids and stuff. Pretty neat. And IG-11 kills a whole contingent of stormtroopers. I'm happy with it.
Yeah. But of course,
I'm sad to see him go, but I'm happy.
Of course, they're not safe once they get out there because Moff Gideon's there and his TIE fighter making strafing runs at him. So then,
man, some cool shots here.
Give me my jetpack. And we get that that scene that I kind of wish they hadn't put in the trailer. Of
Same.
The Mandalorian like flying with the jetpack and then using his grappling hook to like latch onto the TIE. He plants some charges, blows the TIE up. It's all very well done. Like this episode is this the best one?
It's one of the best ones without a doubt.
Yeah.
It's tough. The third one still might be the best one. I don't know. It's hard to say. The first, third, and last are clearly the three best.
Yeah, that's very, very fair.
That's very easy to say. Take your flavor from those, right? Take your flavor.
So they end up, you know, not happily ever after necessarily. Cara Dune stays with Grief on Nevarro. Didn't
Way
the
of
child
the Phoenix.
Go off. And then Dave Filoni ruined it.
Oh, no. I was waiting to talk to you about this. So Mike and I have not talked about this, by the way. We've kept ourselves pure from talking about this with each other because we save it for the show. The nature of our show, we just kind of go. I think it's safe to say, Mike, we just talk. And I don't think Dave Filoni ruined it, but I want to hear your reasoning behind this. No. I know what you're going to say, but explain yourself.
He didn't ruin it. And it might have been Jon Favreau for all we know, because he's a big
Mando
head. Dave Filoni ruined other episodes of the show. But I've already talked about that.
Not the first one though. It's great.
Yeah, because he didn't actually direct that. Jon Favreau did.
Oh, you made that up in your mind. I think Dave did it.
I think
the film experts have determined this now, Mike, that Filoni directed the first episode second after he actually directed the later episode, the fourth or fifth episode on Tatooine?
Fifth.
A lot of people have perceived / gathered that was actually the first episode they filmed.
Yeah, I don't believe that at all. That's
so
just people trying to make excuses.
Like first episode.
That's just people making excuses for him being a bad director. Yeah, and Richard Marquand directed Return of the Jedi too. It really wasn't George Lucas standing over his shoulder. anyway, beyond that, the Darksaber shows up and it's fine because it's something.
It's cool.
It's what they were hoping Darth Maul and Solo would do. That had an actual like positive effect because people were like, "Oh, I thought he was dead. That's weird. I don't care." But here, people are like, "Oh, cool, a black lightsaber. What's that from?" And I got to tell a bunch of people, "It's Clone Wars and Rebels and Mandalorians and stuff
Mandalorians,
I only sort of pay attention to because I still don't care all that much about Mandalorians." Until this show, I thought they were kind of boring. This show did a lot to bring me around on them.
Fair enough. No, they're really amazing on the show, and the Darksaber signals a lot of things, but mainly with us being the show, the Canon Cantina, it signals a lot of things to us because it does have a place in canon, Mike, like you talked about. Darth Maul had it. A lot of the leaders of Mandalore had it. It predates back to the Old Republic and things like that. What's most important about it, though, on the character motivations of this show, it really does back up with Gideon saying that he was there the night, you know, the Empire basically destroyed Mandalore.
Maybe he was leading the charge.
Yeah. Clearly Gideon did some bad things and took the Darksaber for himself, which was an heirloom of the Mandalorian royalty. And here's what's interesting about this is Din Djarin very well might be that rightful heir to the Darksaber. You know what I mean? He really might be in the way of the canon at this point, 5 years after Return of the Jedi, but Gideon has taken it for himself. And
as long as the Armorer is alive, the Armorer deserves it over him.
Deserves it and is the rightful heir. Who knows what all the incidents. Sabine is somewhere in a time warp somewhere.
Sabine's off doing a thing. I think that we might actually see Bo-Katan show up in live action form in season two. Like retaking
the throne of the Mandalore.
That could be cool.
What about live action Sabine showing up potentially?
That's dangerous.
It is dangerous, but it's less dangerous than Ahsoka or anything like that.
It's less dangerous than Ezra Ahsoka
or Ezra.
I'd probably put it on the same level just because it's easier to put humans, you know, in a show and have them do all those things.
But Sabine's human.
Well, and that's what I mean. It's easier to do like Ezra or Sabine than Ahsoka in live action.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, I mean Sabine as a character, what she is. I get a little riskier with Ezra because all the weird stuff he did with the Force and what all that means for canon and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
but
Sabine,
even at the end, like Ezra earned respect. Nobody liked Ezra. People like Sabine. And, you know,
people love her. I love her too.
Do you bring on Tia Sarkar
and Dave loves her,
or do you do something else? Because that's your first decision, and it's probably the biggest one right there.
What do you mean? Can you expand on that?
Do you have Tia Sarkar play Sabine, or do you recast her and treat Tia as a voice actor?
Right, and this is the same discussion with Ahsoka too, right? This is clearly the same discussion. People want Rosario Dawson to play Ahsoka and stuff like that.
There's more levels of complication with that, but yes.
Yeah. Very good questions. I would love to see Sabine in the show because if there's a show called The Mandalorian, this is probably where she shows up. If she shows up in live action ever.
Very true.
If she shows up anywhere else, it's probably misplaced in live action. So we know she's somewhere at this point. 5 years after Return of the Jedi, her and Ahsoka are looking for Ezra, presumably. It just gets interesting with the Darksaber because Sabine was the heir. She revoked it. She not necessarily revoked it, but she passed it on to Bo-Katan and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Dave, there's a lot of connective tissue here. I'm interested, but what's most important, I think purely if you only watch the show and this show's character motivations, Din Djarin and Gideon. There's a tie there with the Darksaber. It was a sacred sword of the Mandalorian people. Gideon did bad things, you know.
He's a bad man.
Now he owns it.
Gus Fring. just back to the Sabine thing. I will say that if they put Sabine in, I am in the camp of let Tia Sarkar do it. Because I think she's a good actor. But if I had to weigh in on the Ahsoka thing... if Ahsoka was going to appear in a movie and not just a one-off of a TV show, I say recast. Bum, bum, bum. All the Ahsoka stands are coming to murder me now.
It is strange because you could argue that Ahsoka's voice is more recognizable. So then you get weird where it's like, do you recast entirely? Do you recast and have someone do the voice? I mean, we have this amalgamation in modern movies and Clone Wars now with Maul, right? We have Sam playing the voice and Rey playing the body in now Clone Wars final season.
That's all. That's different though, because it's real quick. It's real quick, or it's animation. My logic is that I think that Tia is just a better actor than Ashley Eckstein. I've just seen enough to think that I think she could do it in live action.
I agree.
I don't.
You say it's real quick. It is real quick right now with Maul, but potentially if Maul returns in the Obi-Wan show or something in the future, they're going to have to get more creative with Rey's body.
He cannot come back in the Obi-Wan show.
He might.
That will ruin his ending.
And Rebels.
Yes.
I think they're going to redo this Rebels scene in Obi-Wan. For the general audience.
Okay, and that's okay.
The one scene, yeah.
But he can't, like, have run-ins with him before. Anyway, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Mandalorian. So final
it'll be two actors. It'll be Ray and Sam together. It'll be great.
Final thoughts on The Mandalorian as a show.
Okay.
There was a lot of hype around this. It was kind of the flagship for Disney Plus. I think it's kind of succeeded in that regard. What are your overall like final thoughts on the whole season?
I've got a couple ideas, Mike. Do you want to start with some pros or cons? Because I think we should talk about them in a lump sum together.
I think you have way more thoughts on this than I do. I think the show got a 7 and we didn't quite get everything we were promised, but it was fine.
My biggest complaint on the side of cons is episode length. You and I both, and several other people in the community, the list goes on. It seemed we were led to believe this would be more of a HBO style show or something along the lines, where it was like 40 minute to maybe even hour episodes.
Yeah.
We got 30 minute episodes often.
Although the good ones were longer.
Absolutely. I'm a little amiss and sad that we didn't get a consistent number on all the episodes. I would have rather preferred 40 minutes on all of them than some be 30, some be 50, some be 27. You know what I mean?
You know what? I definitely felt that way. I was like, man, I feel like we're getting robbed of time. But also, if they'd made some of those episodes longer, those episodes were already bad. It just would have made them worse.
I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, like, the first episode wasn't as long as we expected it to be, and it was great.
I wish you could all see him roll his eyes like I get to when I say things like that.
it's too much. So, Mike, I'm going to talk about the positive of the show. That's one of my only negatives of the show. Clearly, we've talked about in the show. You and I both talked about in the show. There's episodes that are pure standouts. There are episodes that are not quite as good. There's some that are not very good. But they all forward the story and the world building.
No,
in some
they
way.
Don't. World building, yes. Story, no. Episodes,
yeah.
Like 5, 6, and half of 4, you don't need.
All that aside, it's hard to talk about this show without getting too fan servicey and too divisive, but I will say this is the most I've enjoyed Star Wars in a long time. Not that I necessarily enjoyed this more mm-hmm. or less than some of the sequel movies, but this to me, and I don't want to make these absolute type of statements, Mike, but this show is the type of stuff that you and I were acting out as kids in the 90s and 2000s, for better or for worse. All the positives and negatives of that.
Yeah.
And what I say that because this is the new canon with this time period that is the massive gap between Return of the Jedi, Star Wars Aftermath, all the way to The Force Awakens, right? This is a massive gap in canon that we still don't have very much in. And the stuff we have in it, it's really great. The Aftermath trilogy, Bloodline, things like that. But there's so many years unspoken for. And then on top of that, they were not bound by the Skywalker story or the Jedi Sith story. So they really could do something new, inventive, at times formulaic, which is fine, but they did do something new in canon that's live action, and I just had a blast. Like, every week was such a treat, even the bad episodes, because it was new. It's new.
No, I completely agree with everything that you said, and I never held this to the standard of movies. I tried to treat it as its own thing. Maybe it just got compared to like other Star Wars like TV shows or whatever. I think that it did do a good job of walking that line of new things and fan service and doing enough that casual fans will still be entertained and interested and wanting more. I think they've done a good enough job to justify having a bigger budget in season 2. I think that would go a long way
towards
helping some of the worse episodes. And I think it, I don't want to like misquote something, but I think I remember reading that Jon Favreau is going to be more directly involved day to day in season 2 that they're already working on, because he's not like doing Lion King at the same time.
Right.
They got super lucky that Baby Yoda was a hit. If it had sucked, it would have killed the show.
Yeah, I don't, You're right. I don't think it's necessarily super lucky, though.
Lucky is not the right word. They put the work into, like, the work and time and effort and money.
The
into
idea that and the craft.
Yeah. Like they put the required amount in to make it work. But sometimes you do that and things still fail.
Well, here's what's cool, Mike. Like, this show without the child, we also would have watched a show with IG-11, a show with Mandalorians, a show with the Pearl Remnant, a show that takes place in a time period we've never seen in canon outside of the Legends stuff. We would have still watched it. What pushed it over the edge was the fact that they did do the child, they did do the Yoda baby, and it excelled, and they did this sort of wolf and cub storyline, the samurai storyline, and they executed it so well. Like, it's already a really enjoyable show if you're a fan. It's already, like, really enjoyable because it's not bound by the movie constraints. But then you add this relationship with the Mandalorian and the baby, and, like, you're just more invested. You just are.
You're more invested, and it gets you a wider audience, because my sister wouldn't have watched the show, I don't think, until she saw Baby Yoda. What?
Right. It's one of those brilliant, beautiful things that does bridge the gap between this thing we're doing right now, talking about the show on a weekly basis, talking about Star Wars, all the way to the casual fan who just sees that baby and says, "What's that about? I want to watch that." Incredibly successful, kind of knocked it out of the park for a first Star Wars live action show. Obviously, there's areas that can improve, but there's also areas they can grab onto and say, "That really worked. Let's do that on our future shows."
Let's see. So I don't, let's make some predictions about season two to kind of wrap things up. We'd already said,
sure.
Like, let's assume they get a slightly bigger budget. So that means they continue improving their, ILM, whatever they call it, their X screen. Most of the show was shot inside on the soundstage, which is incredible.
Amazing.
Let's see.
It shows too. I think it really shows.
Let's see. I think, Bryce Dallas Howard has earned another shot at directing an episode. She did episode 4.
Oh man.
She knocked great it out of the park with her directorial debut. I want to see more just Jon Favreau directed, since he's going to maybe be more involved because he's not doing Lion King or anything else at the same time.
Okay.
What else? Season 2 is where you could definitely get your legacy bounty hunter characters brought in. Your Bossk or your Dengar.
Don't tempt me. Now with Dengar, with his Rise of Skywalker appearance, it's getting really weird. I mean, like,
that's not confirmed to be Dengar.
It's like 80% confirmed. I mean, it's so weird. It's so weird. I love it. I love Dengar more than I ever have, but you're right. We could get some name bounty hunters. Let's go Fringe, Mike. Let's go. You and I having our almost 30-year knowledge of Legends and stuff. What about the Imperial Remnant Gideon stuff?
I don't want to see any of that because Legends is over. Give me a new story.
You know what I'm saying, though. You see, you're getting focused on your hangouts with Legends.
Well, no.
Gideon stuff? Because that's probably going to be a big focus of season two, I feel like, is like maybe some of the world building of the Republic, the New Republic,
yeah,
and the Imperial Remnant stuff, because we got pieces of that, which was awesome. Like, we got Matt Lanter, like you talked about, in a New Republic new trooper ship costume. We got Gideon. What can we get
with this? I just don't care about the Imperial Remnant as a unique faction. I know they got their build out in Legends, and I thought you were asking what specific things from that would I like to see. Just be the...
Because Gideon's obviously going to be a force in the second season. He's going to be probably more pronounced than he was season one, of course.
Just be the Empire, but we know that you're defeated and on the way down. I'll tell you what I don't want to see in season two. Boba Fett.
The First Order?
Boba Fett. Don't want to see
him. He's coming.
I know there's that rampant speculation. Oh, we heard a sound effect. I hope he doesn't show up.
It's him.
What if it's somebody else wearing the armor? If it's a twist like that, maybe I could be on board.
Okay, I'll give you a twist, Mike. Boba Fett comes for the child, and Mandalorian kills him. That would be awesome.
you get real into needy explainer territory. I'm not saying me, but you get into, well, how did he survive the Sarlacc pit? Well, how did Palpatine survive? Blah, blah, blah. Just the same sort of obnoxious stuff that we've seen on online in Star Wars.
The man has a jetpack. That's the answer, you know? And apparently he was one of the best, but he died in the Sarlacc pit.
He wasn't a Mandalorian.
I know he wasn't. Mike, you're preaching to the crowd here.
Yeah.
So, but he did have a jetpack that he apparently knew how to use pretty well. But I just think the most interesting way to bring Boba Fett in would be as a villain.
Well,
to our main leads.
You're not going to bring him in as a good guy.
No, I'm not saying as a good guy. I'm just saying, like, he's going to be an antagonist to the Mandalorian and the child. And that would be interesting because all the Boba Fett massive fans and nerds would be like, what? I don't know what's happening.
And the instant they do something that those fans and nerds are like, well, Boba Fett wouldn't do that, then it all falls apart because Star Wars fans have proven to be the worst.
We don't know much about Boba Fett.
Just so
just can deal with it.
We didn't know much about Palpatine. Just keep him out of it to avoid any of that drama. Like, bring in like an Imperial loyalist Mandalorian to fill that. You know, somebody, a rival Mando, but leave Boba Fett out of it, please.
I appreciate what you're saying, Mike, and I appreciate it's recorded in this format, but he's probably appearing at some point. Maybe not season 2.
I'm sure he is, but if it is, I hope it's quick.
Same with Sabine.
He climbs out of the Sarlacc and Din Djarin's like, get back down there. And he just kicks him back down and that's it.
Throws that annoying kid's body on top of him. Mr. Hoop Earring. So there you go.
But yeah, Mandalorian. I know I criticized amazing. It a lot. It's not amazing. It's pretty good.
It's amazing. In the way of Star Wars content goes. Might not be amazing the way of shows or film goes, but to me, as a Star Wars fan, you're getting your Star Wars fan experience with The Mandalorian 100%. You just are. And Mike, you can't deny that. I mean, you and I had some weird fan moments that probably no one else had. We had like Ewok movie stuff. We had like video game stuff. I'm not saying all this is good or bad. I'm just saying it happened. We experienced it like that no one else experienced because we grew up with all this stuff.
I guarantee you we're not the only people, but I get what you're saying. But yeah.
No, absolutely not. That's why they did it.
Have they said when season 2, I know like they're working on it now. Have they given a tentative release window for it?
I think Jon Favreau, last time he mentioned it after he posted that sultry, weird, muscular Gamorrean guard, he said it's going to be in season 2.
Ooh, you know what? Give me some of that. Give me some Buff Hutt, Gracchus the Hutt. Ooh, that's what I want to see.
Yeah,
I want to see a Hutt in season 2. Even if it's not
there
Gracchus, give me a practical Hutt in season 2.
You nailed it. There it is. Give us Nar Shaddaa or Nal Hutta. Give us one of those Hutt planets where we see more of the underworld, less of the bounty hunters, but more of the underworld of the Star Wars galaxy, and we see more Hutts. John Favreau confirmed that it is fall/late fall of next year.
Take your time. Great. Take your time. Do it right.
Yeah. That's not very far away, Mike. That's really not very far away.
Yeah.
We will be doing this again within the year, you know?
All right. I think I've said everything I've got to say about Mando season 1. Any other final thoughts from you?
No, I'm just excited to see where this goes because clearly season 1 was an introduction not only to us as Star Wars fans, but an introduction to, as you said, Mike, the world, the greater general audience. So maybe season 2 can dig down deep in different ways with the story, characters. I'm interested in that.
Yeah, so that will do it for our wrap on The Mandalorian season 1. Thank you for joining us here at the Canon Cantina today. Follow us on social media at the Canon Cantina everywhere, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. We're hosted on Anchor, so anchor.fm/thecanoncantina. There might be hyphens, there might not. You'll get there either way. We would appreciate a rating, review, If you think that there's something we can be doing better, that's great. Send us an email, canoncantina@gmail.com. We hope that you all are happy that we're back. We needed our month-ish long break, but we're back with the second season, new format, more focused, and different, like varieties in episodes. So, we're excited and we hope you are too.
Yeah. Once again, thanks for listening, guys. And really appreciate you guys sticking with us during the break and just the new year. Once again, if you have any thoughts of The Mandalorian that we did not cover, hit us up on social media. We would love to talk to you about it. And of course, as Mike said, just keep following us everywhere. And we've got a lot of new content coming that's not related to Mandalorian, not related to Rise of Skywalker. I'm really excited about that, Mike.
Just had a thought. What if Cad Bane shows up in season 2 in live action, but he's wearing Dave Filoni's cowboy hat?
I can't tell if you're being serious or trolling.
I can't either. So I don't know if that's a good idea or bad.
Cad Bane's hat is about 3 inches wider around everywhere than Dave's hat.
Yeah, so but what if that's your animated to live action concession? He's just wearing Dave Filoni's.
I would love Cad Bane to come on because he would scratch the itch with the more hardcore Star Wars fans, but for new people, he'd mean nothing. So he might be better than a Boba Fett, right?
Ooh.
That'd be great.
I cowboy hat or not, cool, I can actually get behind that logic.
Well, Cad Bane's hat is awesome. Like he's a generic gunslinger guy, but he's a cool character. And you know, case in point, Mike, we did not see where Cad Bane ended up. He had not been in Clone Wars for some time.
That's the switcheroo. You think those are Boba Fett's boots? No, that's Cad Bane. I'm actually totally on board with that.
We figured it out. I'm so excited to see a live action Duros, super tall Duros, gunslinger. Yeah, that'd be sick. I love Cad Bane more than anybody. You know that. So I'm excited. I mean, he's basically just Dave Filoni being like, I want to write my own version of Clint Eastwood. So there you go.
Yeah. So if you have any other weird ideas like that that pop into your head, we'd love to hear them. Just tweet them at us, send this message, however you communicate on Instagram. Jesse runs that. I don't know how Instagram works. I'm too old.
Right.
Okay, boomer.
Yeah. Instagram.
Yeah.
We're barely keeping that afloat, and things like TikTok and stuff exist, and we're like, we can't even get there. We can't even get there.
Get a bite? Do you know what a bite is?
It's too much. I've heard it. It's too okay. much.
We've let this drag on long enough. Thanks for joining us here in the Canon Cantina today, everybody. Cheers.
May the force be with you.
Boring conversation anyway.